You may own a dog or a cat, or perhaps you own something else as a pet. Have a pet like a bird or a fish or a hamster or a snake or a lizard. We're going to focus on those kinds of pets today. What we might consider to be the more exotic pets, although Mike Hoffer might beg to differ a little bit as we visit with him. Mike is owner and creator of Hoffer's Tropic Life Pets. Located in Milwaukee, it's, we think, Wisconsin's most unique animal center. It's located on 76th Street in Milwaukee. He has a website, hofferstropiclife.com, and you're certainly welcome to take a look at that. And maybe you have some questions for him as we move along. Maybe you have some questions about the pets that you have or are considering getting, and certainly you are welcome to join in with any of those kinds of questions. Here's the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234 in the Madison area. You can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890, or email us at talk@wpr.org, and we'd be happy to visit with you. Mike Hoffer with us by phone. Mike, hi. Thanks for taking time to be with us again.
Well, you're welcome. Good morning.
I tell you what, I've asked this question before, but just to give those who haven't heard you speak before a little background, tell us about how you got started in this this whole business and kind of where you are now.
Well, I started 35 years ago, and it was an aquarium store only. And I had about maybe 25 aquariums in there, and I ran it part-time and worked a full-time job. And back in those days, you could do things like that. And I after work, I'd go in and open up the shop, usually from 4 to 9, and weekends, and just kept building and putting all the little profits that I was making back into it. And today, we've moved 5 times, and at present time, it's the second largest store in the United States.
Yeah, it's quite an achievement. And you have how many different kinds of pets do you have for people there?
Well, we carry the full gamut of reptiles, turtles, lizards, snakes. We toss the scorpions and tarantulas into that, and frogs and not salamanders anymore, but birds, mainly small cage birds, no large birds, kittens, ferrets, just tons of small animals, hedgehogs, sugar gliders we breed here, rats, mice, hamsters, gerbils. In fact, the 22nd, we're having our annual hamster race, our 7th annual hamster race.
The 22nd of July?
Of July.
And what does that entail?
50 or 60 kids putting hamsters in these little runabout balls. We put them on a track. We lay down the bets, and we see who wins. No, everybody that enters gets a nice little gift. We co-sponsor it with Super Pet, who makes all that kind of racing equipment, and just have a ball. We must pack 200 people in here.
Oh, that's got to be a lot. So that's July 22nd.
Yes.
And before we go any further, I just want to mention we had a few people call with comments or questions about dogs, and you don't deal in dogs at all, and maybe you could...
I do not deal in dogs.
Yeah, explain why.
My first job was working for a veterinarian, and my job was to clean all the dog cages, and I vowed never to put a dog in a cage.
Huh.
I don't feel it's right, I think I try to tell my customers when they come in to go to somebody's home or go to the local animal shelter, rescue one, mm-hmm. and or go to somebody's home and have a pick of the litter, see one or both of the parents. And that's my philosophy on them. I think during the first few months of a puppy's life, they should be running around, not in a cage.
Yeah. Well, it's a pleasure to be able to talk with you about all of these other animals. My gosh, how did you – you've educated yourself really well. I've heard you answer questions on all of the
– Since I was 8 years old, this is what I knew I wanted to do. And I really wanted to become a vet, but that wasn't possible. So I did the next best thing, and I think it was the best thing to have a pet shop.
You bet. Give us a call if you have a question for Mike at 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890. Or again, email us at talk@wpr.org. You've got a bug show coming up as well.
Oh, this weekend.
Yeah, this coming weekend. What's that all about?
One of my past employees, he left me many years ago, went on to college to become an entomologist. And basically, the only job open when you graduate is to work for Orkin.
Hmm.
So he decided he was going to go out on his own and present bugs, and they are very interesting. You should see this show. And he moved to Arizona and presents to every school down there. He's from here, so he comes back during the summer. He does a stint at Summerfest on the children's stage. He is just an energetic young man. And he's into bugs, and he brings all types of things. And he does a really nice, entertaining presentation. It's great for kids, adults, seniors. You'll get a kick out of it. And it's geared towards the kids, of course. And then afterwards, the kids can come up and handle some of the nicer bugs.
Mm-hmm.
He does bring some formidable ones, but they're beautiful looking. You know, they're exotic.
And that's give us the time and so forth of that.
That's on the 15th.
15th?
And at 1 o'clock.
Oh, so and anybody's welcome to come for that?
Yeah, it's free. He's a dear old friend of mine and does that.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I tell you what, we have some folks who want to visit with you, so let's go to the phones.
Sounds good.
Yeah, Jan in Fitchburg, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. I have a question about birds. I at times feel like it would be really great to have some sort of an exotic bird of the talking variety, but I wouldn't, like you, I wouldn't keep my dog in a cage, and I have really ambivalent feelings about keeping a bird in a cage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any bird, except with the exception of the finches and canaries, can certainly be kept outside the cage. You want to keep them in the cage maybe at night. It's like putting them in their bedroom, cover it up. But during the day, they can stay out. We had a cockatiel at home who just had run of the house, or flight of the house, I should say.
So what kind of a mess do you have in the house then?
On top of the mirror, the dressing mirror, in the bedroom. That had to be cleaned up daily.
Mm-hmm.
It's where he liked to sit.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what you're going to encounter. Some birds, now if you clip their wings so they can't fly around, are perfectly content to sitting on top of a perch on top of the cage.
Oh.
And you feel that they really are content, it's not a bad life for them?
No, it's not.
Okay.
All it's right. Not.
And what would be the... what would be the most family-friendly, easiest, like, talking bird variety?
I would say, well, you know, a parakeet holds the record for talking.
Huh.
So as small a bird as a parakeet, very tame, can be tamed down in an hour, and he'll stay tame as long as you handle him. Cockatiels, of course. And some people gravitate up to the larger parrots, macaws, and things like that. Once you get a little more at ease with, I myself, I shy away from the large birds. I don't care for birds that could clip your finger off.
That could be a problem.
I stay with the little guys.
And okay. they can live a long, long time.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them, some of the larger birds can live, what, 50 years?
Yeah, up to 65 years for most parrots.
How long would you expect a parakeet to live?
Oh, a parakeet or a cockatiel, 20, 25 years, easy.
That long?
Sure.
Well, I appreciate the information. I will think about my ambivalence some more then.
All right.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jan. Pete in Stoughton, hello to you. Thanks for calling, Peter.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
I'm wondering how I would go about ridding a domestic rabbit of fleas. She lives in a, well, in seasonal times like this, she lives in a 3x5 dog cage in beneath our back deck, and we were letting her out loose because our yard is heavily wooded, and it, in general, it was a safe thing to do, and she usually came back. Recently, she went out for one of her trips, and she didn't come back for 4 days, and when she did come back, she had picked up a pretty good dose of fleas, and
sure.
I managed to vacuum most of them off, and she seemed to enjoy that, but the fleas are still there, and I'm pretty sure that I can't just go out and buy something that you would use for cats or dogs.
Well, sure.
Like
you sure
bite.
Can. a flea powder for kittens, perfectly safe on a rabbit. My concern is that if her cage is on the ground, or if she is let out and she can roam around a property, they will continue to come back.
Yep.
As long as that rabbit's at ground level, it's going to happen.
We stopped letting her out, and the cage is and always has been off the ground. Okay.
Okay.
So that's how they're kittens. Okay.
Yep.
Kitten flea powder. And
right.
just work it in and comb her out first to get rid of most of the hair, or vacuum her off and put that powder down
on her.
Thanks. Right. Thank you.
Yeah,
You're
thanks,
welcome.
Pete. Thanks for calling. Barbara in Woodstock, Illinois. We will go to you next. Hi, Barbara.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I am wondering, I used to have a bird, a green singing finch.
Yes.
And he died, and I have not been able anywhere to find another one. And I'm wondering why, and if you know of any way I could.
Well, I rely on local breeders for my birds. And the problem therein lies that they may not be breeding a particular species. And I'm at their mercy that way. Or I'm, you know... I think I had some about maybe 7 or 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not seen those since, because I think that the green singing finch is a beautiful song. It I think it's better than a canary.
Absolutely.
You know.
They always sing, no matter what my mood is.
Yeah.
Always sing. It was beautiful.
So
but
it's...
just keep looking, and I'm sure... somebody is going to have them sooner or later.
Well, I've been on the internet, and you know, I just can't find anybody anywhere. So, but I will just look.
Yeah, animals are cyclical. Sometimes people are breeding them by the score, and sometimes they just they're not.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Barb. And one of the things that caught my attention was one of the things you said that caught my attention was that you use local breeders, which I think is important to a lot of people.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's
healthier animals. I like to talk to the person that I'm getting my animals from, birds or reptiles, fish. And I feel I'm getting a better quality product.
And there's also the issue of birds being taken out of the wild in other countries and smuggled in or brought in here, which I think is an issue for a lot of people as well.
Yeah.
Our guest today is Mike Hoffer, owner and creator of Hoffer's Tropic Life Pets in Milwaukee. If you'd like to join in with a question as we visit with him about his exotic animals, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Mike Hoffer today, owner and creator of Hoffer's Tropic Life Pets in Milwaukee. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you visiting and listening in with us. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234. And let's go to Cynthia in Milwaukee next. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I purchased a betta fish. I've had the fish now about 6 months. And all of a sudden, it's just kind of floating around on the top of the water, and I don't know what's wrong with them.
Hmm.
Is he floating sideways or up and down?
Just
a normal fish look? position?
Kind of, I guess, a little sideways. He's not dead.
One of two things, and I would guess that this might be the case, is he might have a swim bladder disease, mm-hmm. In which it throws off their equilibrium, and they have to really struggle to swim.
Oh.
And one of the air sacs that maintain that equilibrium and buoyancy in the water may have ruptured due to a bacteria. It can be caused by a bacteria. It could be caused by an injury. With a betta, they're a loner fish. They live alone. Mm-hmm. I doubt if he got injured any other way other than this bacteria. And they are subjected to particularly vulnerable to bacteria.
Now, where would the bacteria normally come from, Mike?
It's in our drinking water. It's like the common cold is in the air. And when a fish's resistance is lowered, and normally that's caused by a temperature fluctuation, they can get it and contract it. Have you made a water change lately?
I just put them in fresh water. It's probably been like 5 days ago.
Now, is this when you noticed it then?
Well, right after that, I noticed it maybe 3 days later when he started. He's not
okay.
Swimming around, so.
Okay. It could have been a result of the water change.
Uh-huh. So what can I do to get him back active?
Well, there are antibiotics for fish that you can put in the water to cure him of anything like that. Did you add a chlorine ammonia neutralizer? When you did the water change, it removes the chlorine that the city puts in the water?
I had a little in this water because I usually let it set for a few days before I even, change the water.
All right, then it would be the same temperature,
mm-hmm.
and that's important also.
Okay.
I would say just leave them alone, observe them for a few more days. If he seems to be getting worse, get an antibiotic to put in there.
Yeah. And where can we get the antibiotics?
At any pet shop.
Any pet shop would
have. Yeah, and there are a lot of them made specifically for bettas now.
Okay.
All right. Good
luck.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
We receive a lot of calls like that at the store when people think they're doing a good thing
mm-hmm.
and they're changing the water on their fish tank. And they don't remove the chlorine and ammonia that the city now puts in the water. And that's to keep the bacteria count down in our drinking water. But it does affect the fish. So you have to remove that or neutralize it. And the mistake there is, well, I'm giving them fresh water. They should do even better, and they actually do worse.
So, and there are, some tablets or something, aren't there, that you put in the water? Or?
Yeah, mostly liquids now.
Liquids?
That they use.
Okay.
But I would suggest people do that before they change the water. And make sure that the water is about the same temperature as the fish are swimming in now. Because that temperature change of anything more than 2 degrees brings on a stress.
Yeah.
And opens them up for contracting any of the bacteria that they're cohabitating with when they're not stressed. When they're stressed, they'll get it.
Thanks again, Cynthia. Darcy in Oshkosh, it's your turn next. Hi, Darcy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about hedgehogs.
Yes.
Maybe this will appease my guilt a little or prevent this from happening to some other hedgehogs, but I hedgehog sat for a friend for a couple of weeks, and she gave me the cage and all, you know, the food and such, and didn't really tell me a whole lot else. And then shortly after she got the hedgehog back, it died. And later she said, well, maybe it was because there was the hamster wheel in the cage. And she said she thought she heard somewhere that hedgehogs can break their legs in a, you know, traditional hamster wheel. And I just felt awful that this poor hedgehog must have broken its leg. And, you know, I didn't know about this because it was in the cage and she gave it to me. So please tell me, did I kill this poor hedgehog?
Well, was it her hamster wheel?
Yes, it was her cage, the whole deal.
Well, then you didn't really do it, you know. Most of the hedgehog wheels that have come out are flat. They have no bars, so because their little feet can go through, and as that wheel is turning, it could get caught, and they wouldn't be able to lift it out. And then, you know, it gets caught in there, and then they're, all of a sudden they're going upside down. And it gets caught. Other than that, you know, you didn't change any type of food. This didn't occur in the winter, did it?
No.
Okay, because they're susceptible to extreme cold.
Oh, yeah.
But, no. But I wouldn't blame yourself.
No, not your fault, Darcy.
Well, thank you. Thanks again.
Yeah, thanks for calling. What are hedgehogs like as far as a pet?
Oh, they're wonderful. They're very prickly, but when they want to, they can stand them all up and bring them forward. And I mean, it's like a pincushion.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're happy and satisfied, they lay them back. It's more of a coarser hair. It's not really a quill like you would see on a porcupine. And they do have the guard hairs underneath. Mm-hmm. But they're very thin, so they can't keep themselves warm like most small animals can with the fur. I used to breed them maybe 10, 15 years ago, and I had a blast with them. And now they've come out with so many different variations, color morphs, pied, which is like a white albino, the normal ones, which is a grayish black-white type mixture of the hairs, you know, and really sweet.
Thanks, Darcy. Rose in Arborvita, your turn. Hi, Rose.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Well, I have a question about a snapper turtle that I saw in my yard.
Okay.
Well, not in my yard, more by the driveway where it's sandy. And that was in the first week of June.
Yes.
And it was big. You know, if you, I'm 5'1", I put my arms out.
Sure.
Put my hands together.
Okay.
About how big it was.
Most likely it was a female.
Yes, it was.
And she was seeking a place to lay her eggs.
Yes, she was. I didn't think of that. And the next, that night at 10 o'clock, she was still there.
Yeah.
And in the morning, I got up and went over and looked, and here she had dug a hole and laid eggs. And the reason I knew was because there were all these little eggs that evidently a raccoon had gotten to.
Or a skunk.
Or a skunk.
Yeah, they're famous for digging up turtle egg nests.
Yeah. Well, I'd seen this stuff around my yard before, but only, you know, like 5 or 6. And this, there were like 40 of them. And then there were still eggs in there.
Okay.
So I thought, well, I'm going to cover this up so that the skunk or raccoon can't get the rest of these eggs.
Sure.
And then I looked up on the internet, and it said that they take like 9 to 15 weeks to hatch.
Yeah, 2 months.
2 months.
I'm trying to add that up in my head. But
yeah, it's about
normally 58 days, 58 to 60 days for most turtles.
Now I had some mesh
wire,
heavy mesh wire to put on top.
Perfect.
Of it. And I put rocks around it so that the raccoons couldn't bother it.
Yeah.
Now, when should I take that off? Or should I get bigger holes? Or
is it like chicken wire?
It's heavier than that.
Okay. I would just leave it on there.
Uh-huh.
Let the eggs develop. And one day you're going to go out there and you're going to see little baby snapper turtles.
Okay.
Crawling around in there.
I will.
Yeah.
And so then I can just take it off and they'll go down to the lake.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I don't have to worry about them. Well, of course, I check it in the morning.
Yeah.
So I don't have to worry about anything happening to
no.
them because they can't get out.
In approximately 60 days from the beginning of June.
Okay.
So you're going to be looking near the end of July, beginning of August. And this is exactly what I did when I was a kid. And little painted turtles were coming up on shore, and the next day we noticed that they were all the nests were dug up. So what we did, we went around with these little makeshift wire baskets and put them over the nest and waited for them to hatch. And when I went to Florida years later, along the beach where the turtles come up to nest, say Daytona, they have people patrolling that all night, waiting for those sea turtles to come up, lay their eggs, and they put these huge square 3-foot by 3-foot screen boxes around them, and with a big tag on it: if you touch this, you're dead. And they patrol those beaches day and night.
Yeah, I put up a post so that I wouldn't run into it for my car, and I did not tell the neighbor kids what was there.
Good.
And I was afraid that they might want to dig it up.
Are you near a creek or a little lake or pond?
Yeah, we're near Little Arvida Lake.
Okay.
We're about 150 feet from the lake.
Oh, okay. They'll find it.
Yeah. The kids do.
Well, when it gets close to that time, I'll call them up that morning and tell them.
Tell them to come on over. Yep.
Well,
but you did the right thing.
Yep. Thanks, Rose. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. When I was in the Caribbean, I spent a year in Trinidad and watched the leatherback turtles lay their eggs at the on turtle, what they call Turtle Beach, on the island of Tobago, and it's quite a sight to see them, those huge turtles laying their eggs.
It sure is.
It's really something. Angela in Madison, your turn. Hi, Angela.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for calling.
I have a question about my bird. It's a small Hans macaw, and I wanted to know, his feathers on his chest and legs and just in that area are really, they look very ratty and really bad. And I don't know if he's like grooming too much or if it's from molting or if it's behavioral or nutritional maybe. And I just had a question about that.
Yes. it could be any number of those things. Are you paying enough attention to the macaw?
Oh, yes.
Handling them a lot. I would say it's not, it wouldn't be for lack of attention then. A lot of birds will pick their feathers because they're bored. So if you're giving them plenty of attention, they won't do it. The nutritional aspects, if you're giving them a commercial food.
Yes, I give them like a seed mixture.
That's blended for macaws.
Yes.
Then we could rule that out.
Okay. He gets vegetables, too. And
good. Little treats.
Yep. Little treats and things like that.
That's
so
very good to do. So I might just say that it could be molting.
Yeah. He's getting some new feathers in.
Okay.
And I see that going on. So, and he's not really pulling the feathers completely out. He's just kind of ripping them.
Preening.
Sure.
Pulling the sheath off of that.
Right, exactly.
A new feather growth, that's normal. That's what birds do.
Yep, so you got a molter there.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Angela.
It's the best of all the problems.
Yeah, you bet. Rose and Racine, your turn now. Hi, Rose.
Hi there. I guess I have a question about tortoises.
All right.
And social ability of them in regards to their own species. I have this wonderful little Herman tortoise.
Yes.
That I got from this place called Hoffer's. And she's a little over a year old now. And do they need companionship? Or would I be doing her a disservice?
No,
if
actually,
I got her. I mean, I'm not in the intention of breeding or anything.
Right.
It's just being human, you know, we don't like being alone. And I watch her in there by herself, and I wonder,
yeah.
Would
they don't seem to mind. I think in nature, for most parts, they are solitary animals,
mm-hmm.
getting together for breeding, and that's about it. So, you know, our large collection of tortoises here.
Right.
I had 13 of them. In the news, if anybody has been listening, last Sunday, somebody broke in to our fenced-in area that we keep them in and clipped the chain with the bolt cutter and took our largest one and our smallest one.
Hmm.
Virgil was over 100 pounds and Midget was about 10 pounds. And it happened at night. And we bring them in now every night. I was leaving them out for a couple of weeks, and they get along fine.
Would it have to be another tortoise, or could it be like a box turtle?
I don't personally like to mix species.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So
but it could
I,
be, a, say, a Russian tortoise versus
yeah,
her
people,
being a hermit.
People do that all the time.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not doing her a disservice and putting stress on her or anything.
As long as it's the same size.
Okay.
There, too, I've noticed, even with starting out with the same size, little baby ones, one will grow faster than the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's a psychological stress that the larger one, the more dominant, the alpha tortoise, will keep the other guy smaller. And upon removing them, the little guy will just shoot up in size once he's on his own and not being stressed or intimidated by the larger one.
Interesting.
So, yeah, there's some turtle psychology there.
So same size doesn't matter, sex?
No.
Because I'm guessing she's a she.
Yeah. Either sex.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks, Rose. Appreciate the call. Carol in Brownsville, Minnesota. It's your turn next. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I'm calling because you made a remark about you should buy a bird from a private party, that's what you do.
That's what I do.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm having a real hard time. I want a singing canary. And I can't find any private parties. And I've also looked online for pet stores and things. And I come up with nothing all the time.
Mm.
And can you give me a website or an address or someplace where I can find a canary? I want a singing canary.
Gotpets.com.
Dot pet? No, got.
Dot.
Got.
Like Got Milk?
Yeah.
GotPets.com should be able to, they'll have an area there for birds.
Oh, they all do.
And you just punch in canaries and, you know, there too, I just bought 40 canaries from a gentleman that was raising them, and they were the Red Factors, which I haven't had in a long, long time.
Are they singers?
Yes.
I suppose, where did he live?
Well, he's in Milwaukee here.
I see.
There, you know, like I was saying about the green singing finches to the other caller, people will breed a certain type of bird, and they'll have them for sale. They'll have them available. And I still would think that your best bet would be to go to a pet shop that sells birds and tell them you want a singing canary. And
I suppose I could go. See, I've only looked at them up online, and they don't list them.
Yeah.
Okay.
They list all kinds of birds.
Yeah, I think a lot of sites prohibit the sale of some animals, or a lot of breeders are uncomfortable shipping out one animal.
Well, I'd go after it if it was within 100 miles of me. I wouldn't mind going and picking it up. One more question.
Yes.
A long time ago, there was a lady told me that if a bird died in your cage, you wouldn't have such good luck with a bird there again because it would be sick in that cage.
No.
That's
no.
not true.
You sterilize the cage.
Sure.
And normal routine cleaning of the cage, you should be removing the bird, taking everything out, spraying it down with a commercial cage cleaner or a 1 to 20 part bleach water solution.
Yeah,
and leaving it sit on there for a few hours, and then contact time has to be 15 minutes, and it'll kill everything that's on that cage.
All right.
So, that's kind of an old wives' tale, maybe.
Okay, then that's the best you can do for me is gotpets.com, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Or contact the closest larger pet shop.
Yeah, you could go across and ask there, but... Mm-hmm. I thought as long as they didn't mention it online that they wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Talking with Mike Hoffer, owner of Hoffer's Tropic Life Pets in Milwaukee. And let's take another call. Dave in Milwaukee, your turn now. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I got a question about giant Gambian rats. 20 years ago, you had a couple in your store, and it really got me interested in them. But there was some bad news a couple years ago about monkeypox.
Right. Those are the animals that brought them in, brought the virus in, and they have since been banned for importation.
Yeah, so they've got a quarantine.
No, you can't even quarantine them anymore. They won't even accept them into the country.
I mean the ones that are in the country.
I don't know. I'm staying away from them.
Oh, you're staying away. Yeah, I just wondered, how good a pet they make.
They're not.
Hmm.
They're just a giant rat.
So they're not a great pet anyway.
Not the greatest. A regular rat is an excellent pet.
Yep. But the larger ones...
Wild Gambian pouched rat is not a good pet.
All right, Dave, thank you for calling. Agnes in Hoka, Minnesota, let's go to you next. Hi, Agnes.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I heard Carol from Brownsville looking for a singing canary.
Yes.
There's a man in Rushford, Minnesota that sells them. I bought one from him last fall, and he's a real good singer.
There you go.
Rushford.
And I can't think of his name, but if Carol wants to call Aggie in Hoka.
Aggie in Hoka.
Yeah, I can probably look the name up. I'm not at home right now.
Oh, okay. I don't know how we'd be able to give that number. I'll tell you what, we'll put you on hold, and we'll get your number, and then if our previous caller wants to call back and find the number, why we'll do that. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll take some more calls. Again, the number 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest Mike Hoffer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking tropical pets today with our guest, Mike Hoffer, owner and creator of Hoffer's Tropical Life Pets in Milwaukee. Glad to have you listening in. Let's go right back to the phones and to Lori in Appleton. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have a question about cleaning guinea pig cages.
Okay.
We have three guinea pigs, and they live in what we call the pig dominium. It's two levels, and the bottom is made out of two underbed storage containers with wire panels around it, and they seem to choose one bucket over the other to urinate in. How do you get that crud off the bottom of the plastic?
Mm. It would be the same as what we do here in the store, only we have glass, but we'll soak it.
Okay, I've tried that, and I usually use diluted vinegar water to clean with. And I've soaked it with straight vinegar water, and I've soaked it with bleach water, too. And
I was going to say bleach water. Maybe add a little detergent, dishwashing detergent in there and let it soak.
And get
just
yourself,
to soften it up. And
yeah, get yourself a good brush then.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you can't use any scraper like we do.
Okay.
Because we're on glass.
Okay. And as long as I rinse it really good, I'm not going to hurt them with fumes and cleaning stuff?
No, not at all. Just remember that bleach will evaporate, that odor will evaporate mm-hmm. within 8 hours. And,
okay.
of course, dishwashing soaps and that are fine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thanks, Lori.
Thank you.
And on to, well, before we go back to the phones, want to reemphasize that we're not dealing with dogs today. So pretty much everything else, as you've been listening here, we've had a lot of great calls so far. And Dan in Milwaukee is next. Let's go to Dan. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Good afternoon. I have two map turtles and a mud turtle, and I've had them for about 4 or 5 years. I have a UV light, a heat light. I have one of those places where they can pull out that suction cups to the side of the tank. It's a big 50-gallon tank. Is there anything else I need to be doing for them?
No, other than feeding them. I assume you have a filter in there?
Yes, a pump and a filter.
Yeah, just keeping that water quality good. You're providing them with the UV. And you did say you have, like, a heat lamp for basking?
Yes, yeah.
And, I mean, that's it.
Yeah. Excellent.
All right. It can be a very simple setup, as long as it's the proper things.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you.
You bet. Wendy and Franklin, on to you now. Hi, Wendy.
Hi. We discovered this morning we have baby bunnies. My daughter has a pet bunny.
Oh.
And
must
we
have
didn't
more
even
than...
know it was expecting. And this morning she went out to feed it, and she called me out, and there's babies. Is there any special care I should take with them?
No, the mother will do it all.
Oh, that's what I was hoping.
And no, I will caution you to make sure that they are nursing and that she's nursing them. And if for any reason, was it a large litter?
Only two.
Okay, she should have no problem with that.
Okay.
Sometimes animals will have more babies than they can accommodate.
Okay.
And that's where you may have to augment them with a... an artificial mother's milk for rabbits, dogs, cats, but in this case, I don't think you should have any problem.
I mean, she seems like she's doing a nesting thing. I noticed a few days
sure.
ago that she was taking everything into her house. She usually eats outside of it. And everything started going in the house, and I'm like, this is really strange. I even asked my daughter about it. What's going on with your bunny?
That was the tip-off.
How long has she had this bunny?
She has gotten it for Easter.
Okay.
And actually, we got two bunnies for Easter, and my sons ran away about a week after... You got it. And the bunny's raised, so it must have been during that 1 week period when we had the two bunnies that they made more bunnies. I didn't think that young could do that.
Well, you never, I guess we learn something every day, don't we?
Yeah, they say, you know, like bunnies.
Oh, thanks, Wendy.
Okay, have a great day. Thank you.
You too.
Yeah, you too. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. We finally have some open lines. We can get you on fairly quickly. Mike in Beloit, your turn now. Hi, Mike.
Hello. I've got a young ferret that my daughter has.
Yeah.
And he was neutered and descented whenever we got him from the pet shop.
Okay.
But right.
He's still pretty musky.
That's in their skin.
Is it?
Yeah, the gland has been removed. Is it a male?
Yes.
Okay, the male will still possess a lot of that in the skin, even though the gland has been removed. And that's just, you know, if you stick your nose up to them, or can you smell it when you walk into the room?
Oh, yes.
Okay. But almost all the ferrets we get now have been descented. Back in the days when they weren't doing it, it was like having a skunk living in your house.
Yeah.
Okay. They're in the family of Musculidae, so they produce a lot of musk.
Now, would a female ferret be less likely?
Less.
Would be less.
Right.
Okay.
They stay smaller. A lot of people like the males because they get a little bit larger.
Okay.
But, maybe bathe them a little more.
Okay.
They have some excellent shampoos out there now for ferrets to get rid of most of that, and they certainly enjoy baths.
Yeah, he seems to.
They love water, and they love playing in it, so, I mean, you can do that as often as you wish, you know, once a week if you want.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Sure.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Earlier, Mike, you suggested that a caller try vinegar on a cage to clean it.
Yeah, and that's what she tried.
And then if that didn't work, you could try bleach.
Bleach or dish soap.
Someone called in and said, and you never said mix the vinegar and bleach together, but someone called in and said, be sure not to mix the bleach together with the vinegar.
I would never do that. Very good point.
Yeah, very good point. We want to make sure that that was plain. I was sure that's what you said, but I wanted to make sure that everybody understood that, not to mix the vinegar and the bleach together. Jolene in Ashland, it is your turn. Hi, Jolene. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a very, very, very tiny grass snake, and I can't seem to get him to eat anything. Mostly because his head is so little, I can't find anything small enough. I've gotten some crickets that are really tiny.
Well, they don't eat crickets. How long is he about, like the size of a pen or a pencil?
A pinch longer, but about that big around.
Okay, that could be a newborn. They do eat small earthworms. Go out to the garden.
I did give him a couple of those, and that was about the only thing I could get him to eat.
Yeah, well, and that's what they do eat.
Okay.
Slugs. They're hard to find when you want to. And small, tiny little leaf worms. And they do eat fish.
I've gotten fish.
But they'd have to be like little guppies.
Yeah. I have a couple that I'm hoping are going to breed. So hopefully that'll work. but I couldn't find any babies to purchase. So.
Okay.
Okay.
My other question was, I have a little fire-bellied toad.
Mm-hmm.
And the other night I decided that he might like bay flies, which he loves.
Yes.
Can you overfeed them? He never quits.
No.
You can't overfeed him. Okay.
They eat a lot. That's why I never kill a frog or a toad, because they're eating several hundred insects an evening out there.
Okay, because I think he's pretty little, and I gave him five, and he had five the next night, too.
Oh, sure. Okay. And they may take a break every once in a while, but for the most part, they'll eat as much as you put in there, within reason.
Yeah.
And they can eat things that you wouldn't believe, because they're all mouth, you know.
Okay, wonderful. I was just worried sometimes pets will just eat whatever's in front of them and actually eat entirely too much.
No.
Well, should be all right.
Animals aren't like people.
Thanks, Jolie. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Sarah in Madison, your turn. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. We have a ferret. Her name is Tasmania, because she hops around like a crazy little Tasmanian devil.
Yes.
And the ferret shampoo and ferret conditioners are wonderful. She normally smells like pina colada. But there is a spray that we put into her drinking water that it reduced the musk by at least 50% just within 1 week. It's from Marshall's Pet Food, and it's a deodorizer sensitizer, and you just put two squirts into her little drinking bottle every time you refill her water. It's something like in her system that it affects the musk production.
Oh, great.
So it's Marshall's Pet Food.
And we got it it's made by Marshall's, and we got it at the normal pet store.
Sure.
Well, that's good to know. Thank
you.
Thanks, Sarah.
Yep.
That's probably something. Mike, if you don't have that, you're probably going to be having that.
And you know what? The store is so large, I might have that.
I might have it anyway.
I'm sitting over on the shelf over there by the ferret section.
Oh, my goodness. Nick in Green Bay, hello to you.
Hi. I've got maybe two questions, I guess. The legality of this and if it's actually possible. I've got a stream in the backyard, and it's probably got about 1,000 feet of woods. And the bugs are just horrible. And I was wondering about introducing maybe some toads or some frogs, but I don't know how much the DNR would appreciate that. And
they don't. They frown upon releasing of any native animal in a different location.
Yeah. So what do I do about all the, because I've got I can go outside and I'll get attacked by mosquitoes. And I mean, it's terrible because it's all kind of like swampland back there.
Yeah. I mean, that's the perfect breeding ground for them. I don't. That would be more of a question I think you would want to use. I can answer the one question, but I mean, go to a landscaper and see what they how they handle something like that.
One of the things you can do is build a bat house. And if you can build a bat house, bats, and get bats to live in that house, bats eat a lot of insects, especially they like mosquitoes. And I know of people who have built bat houses to control their mosquito population. And they didn't bring the mosquitoes, or they didn't bring the bats in. They just built a bat house and did it properly and got some bats in there. And they did a good job of cutting back on the insect issue for them. So,
good idea.
Not a bad thing to do. University of Wisconsin Extension has a bulletin you can make your own, or they can often be purchased. Bat houses can often be purchased as well. You need to be careful in how you position them and that sort of thing. And we can talk some more about that with our guest, Mike Offer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about all manner of pets today, with the exception of dogs. Our guest today, Mike Offer, owner and creator of Hoffer's Tropic Life Pets in Milwaukee. Really pleased to have him back to visit with us again, and certainly you can join in with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And, Mike, I mentioned just in introducing the program, sugar gliders, that you have sugar gliders that you have for sale. And someone wonders, what are sugar gliders? And maybe you can explain that.
If you could equate them to a flying squirrel. However, they're a marsupial. They have a pouch, and they can have either one or two babies at a time. And they are probably the softest fur on earth. And they're small. They really get attached to their owner. They just totally imprinted with the people that take care of them. And I've known of people that in the cooler months now, it's hard to imagine wearing a sweatshirt now, but they'll stay in between your shirt and your sweatshirt all day. They are nocturnal. That's probably the only drawback, and that they're more active at night.
So they're like flying squirrels, only
yes.
Smaller version.
Smaller version, but it's not a squirrel. It's a marsupial.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a rodent, but just a very sweet animal. We raise them here, and as soon as the mother releases the babies from the pouch, and the babies are kind of on their own, the people that work in our small animal department will handle them every day.
Oh.
So become very nice and tame.
Well, let's take some calls. Mikella in Windenhurst, Illinois, it's your turn. Hi, Mikella.
I just last Saturday got a budgie parakeet. Me and my brother both did.
Okay.
The snakes sound like I'm nuts. But I promise you I'm not. They, like, as soon as I try to open the cage and start chaining them, one starts screaming and trying to distract me, while the other one jumps out of the cage, and then the other one follows it. I've seen them practicing this, and it worked once, only once. But how am I supposed to train them is what I was wondering.
Well, first of all, when you purchase a new bird, such as a budgie or a parakeet, did the store clip their wings? Or
the
person?
The wings are clipped, but
okay.
Otherwise,
they'd be all over the place.
Because
they go running and they slam into the window, because you got like a glass door, and they go slamming into it.
Yeah, they don't know that there's a window there. So you have to pick them up. And you have to handle them, maybe for 5 minutes at a time, and do it 4 or 5 times a day.
So I pick them up physically with my hand?
Yes. Put your hand right around them. Pick them up. perch their little feet on your finger and have them stay right there on your finger. And that's how you start training them. And then you take the finger from another, from your other hand, and go right by their chest and make them step up to your other finger.
But I'm afraid to take them out of the cage because they jump and they sort of flap because their wings aren't very, very, very clipped. They're just, like, a little clipped.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they can't go flying, but they can flap and cushion falls.
Okay. Well, maybe have an adult do the training part.
Mm-hmm. And you can assist. You can be the assistant.
You can put your finger out, and they can sit on your finger.
Thanks, Michaela. Good luck. Get Mom or Dad to work with you on that a little bit. Or any adult. Any adult could help you out with that one. Thank you very much. Always nice to hear from our young listeners. And Corey in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Corey.
Hi, Larry. How are you doing?
Good.
Mike, hello.
Hi.
I've known you for a very, very long time, and I used to be a very good friend of Karen's.
Oh, okay.
But I wanted to make a comment, and we were talking about toxins. Bleach and vinegar obviously is not a good add together, but most detergents these days carry ammonia in them, and ammonia and bleach do not mix. Hello?
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Well,
and the other thing is, I just wanted to quickly ask you is whether or not what do you feed the sugar babies?
All types of fresh fruits, vegetables, mainly the nectary type fruits, and then there's a liquid or a powder nectar that you mix up with water and give it to them.
Wow! So lots of fruits and vegetables.
Well,
mostly fruits.
Mainly fruits, yeah.
Yeah, mostly fruits. All right. Thanks, Corey. Thanks for calling. Appreciate the call. And let's go to Sandra in Oconomowoc. Hi, Sandra.
Hello, thank you. I'd like to ask what breeds of tortoises stay a bit smaller and rather than getting so very large as some do. And I'd also like to ask, what kind of proper enclosure can you use for them in-house?
Okay.
Plastic pond, something like that?
Sure, that's fine. Just nothing with screening because they can keep going looking out. Glass is not advisable. However, it's better than screening, but usually a solid, like a kid's wading pool.
Okay.
That works well. A lot of people build their own and maybe put it up on a counter or a table.
Okay.
By small, what size do you consider small?
Well, I stay away from the 100-pounders, you know.
Right.
But are there some smaller breeds that don't
sure.
get quite
quite
so large?
A few. Your three-toed box tortoise, the Hermans, the Russians. There are other more expensive ones, Marginates. Those stay real small, but for most people, the Hermans, the Russians, and the box
okay.
tortoises are the more common small ones. Some of the Mediterranean type tortoises are real hard to get now.
And
very expensive.
Okay. And that I've heard people talk about UV lights and heat lights. Does that
yes.
mean two different kinds of lights?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
One
okay.
provides the heat.
Okay.
And then the other provides the beneficial rays in a particular spectrum, UVB. There's UVB and UVA, but it's going to natural sunlight.
Okay.
Of course, nothing beats natural sunlight.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks so much for calling. And we'll take some more calls here. You can join in. We have some open lines again. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call, or in Madison at 263-1890, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Chad in Thorpe, Wisconsin. Hi, Chad.
Yeah, hi. I was just wondering if you guys know anything about exotic cats like Savannahs or Bengals, I was wondering if If bobcats are legal to have. I know out in Wyoming, they have them as pets out there. I just was wondering about the laws.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, as far as the laws go, contact the municipality that you live in, also the state that you live in, of course, Wisconsin, the DNR, and more so the local municipality, the city or township that you live in, see if there are any restrictions on those animals.
Mm-hmm. So on a bobcat anyway, what about the other exotic cats that he mentioned?
Same thing, because I know in Milwaukee you can't have certain animals, mainly farm animals.
Okay.
More importantly is research the animal that you intend on getting, that you are wishing for, thoroughly, so that you can provide them with the best possible care and husbandry before you even consider looking for it then.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you know anything about the Savannah cats? I know those are supposed to be domesticated and recognized by like the Breeders Association and all that.
The only one I'm familiar with would be the larger ones would be the Bengal.
Okay, and do you know how large that those get?
Approximately 30 pounds.
30 pounds?
Yeah.
That's pretty big.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, thank you.
All right, sure. Thanks very much for calling. I don't think a bobcat gets more than 30 pounds, does it?
I think a little bit larger.
A little bit
but,
more?
Yeah. And some friends of mine that we've had the tigers come to the store here just obtained a serval cat, which only gets about 30 pounds.
Hmm.
And here are people with tigers, lions, pumas, leopards. She researched the serval cat long before she even got one.
Yeah.
Just to know the needs.
Just to know the needs.
Yeah.
Ryan in Waupun, it's your turn. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I've got a crested gecko breeding couple, and I have a hatchling that's about 6 months old.
Okay.
And I'm wondering how long it takes for them to get up to the full adult size.
Normally about a year.
A year, okay.
Yeah.
And how much should I be feeding the new one?
We believe in free feeding until you get to the point where you know exactly what they're eating every day.
Okay.
So and just keep offering them food, but a smaller amount. What are you feeding? Crickets?
Yeah, small crickets when I can find them. They're harder to find than ones small enough that, you know, they stay in between his eyes is the biggest ones. And baby food with calcium powder and the gecko diet mixed in.
Great. Yep. And just keep, offering them that. And as soon as you develop, and as they're growing, they're going to eat a little bit more. But I'll suggest feeding them smaller meals several times a day.
Okay.
All right, Ryan.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to Marie in Eau Claire next. Hi, Marie.
Hi. I just purchased a little, it's an African frog. And I purchased it because I wanted to give it a better life. It was in a little tiny sputum container, and they had a bit of seaweed in it. And I wondered if there's any way we can stop importing that sort of thing into America.
You're probably speaking of the dwarf underwater frog?
Yeah.
The Xenopus? They're not importing them.
Well, how did it get here? It says African frog.
Well, a lot of animals are from various parts of the world, but they used that frog in research quite extensively.
Oh, they do?
Yes.
Well, what should I research?
Just go to Xenopus, and it's spelled X-E-N-O-P-U-S.
Mm-hmm. X-E-N-O-P-U-S.
Yeah.
Well,
but it's used in research quite a bit for genetics and embryology development.
Is there any?
And it's been around since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so I know they're not importing them anymore. They don't have to.
Oh, well, I just look at him and I think what a rotten life. And I wondered if there was any. Oh, he has a bit of seaweed in his container now.
That's good.
And
something to rest on.
Would he eat flies or anything like that? Would those?
No, they actually eat
greens.
No, they'll eat little pelleted foods. There's a several brands of food out now, just for them, for the underwater frogs. But well, any kind of a small food pellet that you would normally use for fish, they'll eat them.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling.
I always enjoy people that are concerned with a particular animal.
Yep.
And they're making a difference in this world.
Thanks again, Marie. Sandra in Milwaukee, it's your turn now. Hi, Sandra.
Hello. I'd like to know the best temperature range for canaries. I had canaries as a child, and I love them, and I'd like to have a singing canary again. But I do keep my house cooler in the winter than most people do, especially at night. And I'm wondering if it would be too cool for a canary.
I would think 60 degrees or less.
60 or less would
be too cool. Or less
would
cause a problem for them.
Uh-huh.
You can alter that by covering the cage.
Uh-huh.
And putting a heat lamp near the cage.
Uh-huh.
To keep them warmer.
Okay. And as far as the upper range of temperature, it would be okay if it got up into the 80s?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
80s or 90s are fine.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll take some more calls at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments as we visit with Mike Hoffer. And let's go to Milwaukee again and talk to Maggie. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to tell Mike Hoffer how sorry I am that someone broke in and stole two of his private tortoises.
Well, thank you very much, Maggie.
Yeah, we've been through this work quite often.
We're hoping that they'll be back here shortly.
I hope so, and I hope they take care of them.
Yeah, well,
because I have two of my own. I have a big one and then smaller one that I've raised since she was a hatchling. And they're a joy. They really are.
They are.
And the other question I have is I have MS, and I'm going to need to find a home for my smaller one.
Mm-hmm.
Would the office be willing to take them in, or
always.
Do you know?
Always.
Always. Okay. He's about 3 years old now.
Okay.
Yeah. So I just want to help that. I really do.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for your concern. I can't believe how many people have heard about it and are calling us and are stopping in and expressing their concern.
Yeah, well, I know. You know, I've been in the bird field for many years, and when I used to be in the pet business, I've had baby birds stolen, and it's horrible.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
And it's going to be pretty hard to keep a 100-pound...
Well, they get up to 200, I believe.
Yeah, they do. And it's going to be hard to hide them.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to hide. That's
definitely
what
not a pocket pet.
No.
Good luck, Maggie. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I appreciate the call very much. And good luck fighting your illness. Colbath in Lodi, it's your turn next. Hi, Colbath.
Hi, I'm actually Colbath's mom. He won't talk. He's being shy. He's 9. And he has a question. He'd like to know how much a sugar glider costs.
Oh, around $260.
$260.
Yeah.
And he's wondering if it would be an appropriate pet for a 9-year-old.
Sure.
Yeah? You think he could? And what kind of living quarters does it need?
We give them as large as we can.
Mm-hmm.
In most cases, all their cages are approximately 3 feet wide, 4 feet high, and about 1.5 feet wide and deep, and lots of hiding spots and branches and the artificial plastic plants in there. We just try to create an environment that they like.
Okay, and where are you in Milwaukee?
We're on 76th and Good Hope.
Okay. Well, you might have a little 9-year-old coming in for a sugar glider. We'll see. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, ma'am. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, and, you know, they can be friendly little animals for a 9-year-old, I would think.
Oh, yeah.
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 Adrian in Madison, your turn. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I work on wildlife conservation, and although I missed the beginning of your show, I think it might be worth repeating if you already did, how there are laws and regulations against trade in certain wildlife, and people need to be careful.
Yes.
Some dealers might be disreputable and be trading in wild caught. And then, as you mentioned, some of these wildlife are really inappropriate pets, pumas and tigers and so forth. And I think just repeating that might be good because the public doesn't always know. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks for calling. Well, we did talk about that earlier on the show, and I think you probably you agree with everything Adrian has said.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Especially with the gentleman with all the mosquitoes wanting to get toads and release some other frogs, and just don't do that.
Yeah.
Same with fish and ponds. Don't do that. We've got enough problems in nature. We don't need to introduce more.
Yeah. Linda in McHenry, Illinois, it's your turn next. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask your guest, we have about a quarter-acre pond in McHenry, Illinois, and a couple weeks ago, my husband and I noticed that there were hundreds and hundreds of these itty-bitty nickel-sized toads or frogs in the grass along the edge of the pond.
Sure.
They weren't in the water. And so we were just wondering, my husband thinks they're tree frogs. Do you have any idea? I'll take my answer off the air. Dark brown in color.
Dark brown?
Dark brown. Uh-huh. Are they bumpy?
Yeah, they look like little toads, but they're miniature. They're only the size of a nickel, and there's hundreds of them.
Oh, they're probably toads because they're amphibians. Toads lay their eggs in the water, and they hatch into tadpoles, and then they morph into little toadlets.
Oh, and then they
exit the water, and because they're all laid at the same time, they're going to all morph out at the same time. You're going to see a mass exodus from the pond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And they just go forth onto the land and start eating insects and growing and become large toads.
Okay, well, thank you.
Sure.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, they come out as tadpoles, then they have a tail to begin with, and they kind of lose that tail as they grow a little older, and they don't go back in the water. They stay out in the air.
Unless they go in there to lay their eggs again.
Yep, they go back in there.
A few years later.
They go back in to lay their eggs. Well, I tell you what, Mike, it's always a great pleasure to talk with you. And let's remind everybody that this weekend you have a bug show on Saturday, this coming Saturday at 1 o'clock, right?
It's the 15th.
Oh, I'm sorry, the 15th. So it's
That would be Sunday.
Yeah, that would be Sunday, sorry.
At 1 o'clock.
Sunday at 1 o'clock, and then on the 22nd, you've got a hamster race.
The hamster race.
All right.
And they're both free.
And they're both free. And
a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Thanks so much for being with us, and we'll just tell people they can probably find out some more by going online to your website, hofferstropiclife.com.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks a lot, Mike. I really appreciate it. Hoffers, and by the way, Hoffers is spelled H-O-F-F-E-R-S, hofferstropiclife.com. And he does buy all of his, the animals that he has, he buys locally and makes sure that they are not brought in from the wild illegally or otherwise. So it's great fun to have him with us, and we'll have him back sometime, and I'm sure we'll do this again. Just to let you know, tomorrow, Cindy Hale of Duluth talks about destructive earthworms. There's some research on that, quite interesting. And then Rick Clemmie talks about cooperative extension and some issues facing it. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.